Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC Level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard Level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a Level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast for Friday, October 11th, 2024. This is episode number 58 on your podcast. Today we will be discussing the Cybercab and the Robo Van. One of us has done a range test on a Silverado EV just in time for the 2025 model to come out with a whole bunch of new specs. And GM Energy starts talking about how you can get home storage and their battery offering. And of course, much, much more in the last 7 days. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the congenial Mr. Tom Mologany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And of course, he is back from some insane road trips. Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Outer Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for his number of YouTube channels. Gentlemen, welcome along. And dear listeners, welcome along. If you're watching us live, then make sure you take part in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Let's get into a bit of wash-up then from last week. Tom, we'll come straight to you. We spent a good time last week talking about NLX Way closing down operations. They said we'll give it to the 11th of October, but for some commercial operators, they just couldn't connect to the servers the next day. We had this weird line, Tom, in the press release announcing their departure from the US, saying that, so far unspecified, unnamed third party will be appointed to deal with any outstanding issues. That's really what that meant. The last 7 days, we've been appealing for them just to leave your servers turned on. Tell us about your proprietary language. We can keep all this hardware in the ground and working. Just work with the community. Tom, what's happened the latest? What can you tell us?
First, I want to apologize for my bad internet connection here today. I'm sure people realize I probably look a little grainy and on a delay. I don't know what's happening in my area, but the internet is really bad right now. All morning I was working on it, but this is as good as it gets right now. So sorry. I've made a couple videos on this, and just a couple of days ago, I actually got the CEO of Charge Lab and the CEO of Epic Charging, as well as the CEO of United Chargers, Gleb, who's been on the show here and a sponsor of Batteries Included, together. And we talked about some of the things that Epic Charging and Charge Lab are doing to migrate some customers over to their back end so that they can continue to use the NL equipment. it's really unfortunate the way NL handled this. It's like a, you know, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it without cursing. It's about as bad as you could ever handle customer service. Just sending out these emails saying, oh, in 9 days, everything's being turned off. Martin mentioned the fact that how immediately after some of the commercial customers couldn't access their equipment, because from what I understand, the servers were still running, but it was getting over, the servers were getting overloaded because so many of their customers were trying to access it or something. So it temporarily shut everything down, but then things started working again. And they said they were going to keep it operating till the 11th, which is today. There was a huge outcry. I made a few videos on it. A lot of people have been blasting them on social media as much as we can. And don't forget, this is a huge company. NL owns NLX Way. You know, they, of course, they gave it a new branding and said, oh, well, that's a different company, but it's NL, an enormous company with billions of dollars of revenue. So there, it wasn't like they couldn't afford. They were going out of business. Companies go out of business all the time. They don't mean to. They're just bad planning, and you almost can't blame them. Look, they went bankrupt. Isn't the case with this? NL just said, we're not making money over there in the U.S. like we expected to, or for whatever reason. So we're just going to shut down everything and you know, take our bags back to Italy where they're based. So it's good to see that it seems like the pressure that a lot of people have applied on them made them rethink this. And they sent out emails yesterday saying, you know, after further evaluation, you know, we're going to keep our servers running. So the equipment will still work until we figure this out, until we appoint a third party. And the good thing about that is, besides appointing a third party, with the servers up and running, these other companies, other software providers like ChargeLab and Epic Charging that I was dealing with, and I had on a very good interview. If you guys didn't see that yesterday, I posted it. I think it came out really well. I think it was very informative. There's other companies in addition to those two companies that are working to be able to migrate customers to their software so you can still use your equipment. And the good thing about it is you'll be able to choose. There'll be a bunch of companies doing this as long as NL keeps their servers running long enough to be able to do this. Once they shut down their servers, these companies can't, like, you'd need to hire, you know, CIA to crack the codes of the computer of their back end software to be able to get into NL and then change, point the chargers to different software. So it looks like this isn't going to be as big a disaster as we had thought originally it was looked like when they sent us out this email. So we're not out of the woods yet, but it looks like NL is doing the right thing with keeping the servers running until somebody else can get appointed. We still don't know where this is going to end up. And I still recommend, quite honestly, if you have older NL equipment, you know, it's been in the ground 5-6 years, rip and replace at this point. You know, don't deal with all this bullshit. I know it's going to cost you more money, but you know what? 5-6 years down the road, the equipment's probably starting to see its age or whatever. And I'm not talking about people in their house. I'm talking about commercial customers that own 10 of them. They're in apartment buildings, so forth and so on. I think the time to do that. If you have new equipment, maybe hold on a little bit and see where the cards fall once all this happens. You might be able to continue on with another service provider.
Excellent advice. Thank you, Tom. And we hope they do the right thing, because this is how companies have legacies. You know, if for whatever reason they're pulling out of the North American territory, it happens. Businesses change. Strategies change. It's all okay. As long as you say, hey, here's the 3-month plan. We're going to walk you through it. And, you know, this, your equipment's going to be fine. Here's the new company. Here's the new deal. And ideally, you know, here's a sweetener. So if there are any extra fees, and here's your first 6 months covered, that, you know, that kind of thing, to go over and above. When your revenue is $150 billion a year, you can do the right thing. Thank you, Tom. That's amazing. I'll make sure that we give you plenty of notice when we come to you with this with your internet delay, so you know we're coming to you. All right, let's talk cyber cab and cyber robo, robo van as it is. Last night was the big Tesla event, a nice event in the darkness under the lights with the Cybercab. I'll give you the stats on this quickly. A 2-seat coupe design with a large storage space under the rear. In the rear, under a windowless liftback hatch, no physical controls inside it, so no steering wheel, no pedals, and it's going to be $30,000, and that's going to be ready before 2027. They showed some robot stuff with vacuum cleaning and wiping the screen of the robo van, of a cyber cab. The robo van was also a futuristic design that leans back into the streamlined modern style of the 1930s Art Deco. So that'll carry 20 people and cargo and, an unsupervised FSD coming in 2025 in Texas and California. Now, Dom, I know you've been all over this. Thank you for your notes, because I haven't caught the event yet, but I certainly will do sometime over the weekend and read up on it. So what did you reckon then, Dom?
Well, as you can see on your screen here, this is basically the thing. What it looks like, a mashup between the Model 3, the Cybertruck, and Model Y somehow all in there together. Super low profile wheels. I'm not really sure what to say about this whole thing. Let's see. So they have this, and they say it's going to be, I don't know. I don't know where to start with this event, you know. I guess to talk about the vehicle a little bit more. There's this, and there's also the RoboVan, which carries up to 20 people. So they really, like the script on this slide really kind of lays it out. A robotaxi, premium point-to-point transportation, most affordable, cheapest to operate, always your car. So this is going to be available for public to buy under 30,000. They expect, he says, and then they have the robo van as well, or as he's called it, the robo van, which had me wondering. I didn't figure it out for a minute. Like, what's a robo van? Oh yeah. But yeah, so it was a pretty big event last night, and they had the Optimus robots actually played a large part in the thing. Event was titled We, Robot, and you know, robots were kind of like all over the place last night, like actually serving drinks and, you know, kind of just showing off the ability of its AI stack, I guess, which is going to be also the same AI that runs these cars. So they had all these cars running around, and I'll just go through some of the slides of what it looks like here. They had this car running, or a bunch of these cars. They had 50 vehicles all together, a lot of Model 3s and Model Ys as well, like driverless, but also these, a handful of these at least, and just taking people around this whole like movie set kind of situation. And just kind of recreating what it might feel like, you know, but it's, I don't know. Kyle, how real is this? Is like, I was thinking this morning, like, we hate concept cars, but is this just like another concept car? Because we really don't know much about it. Like, but does it really work, or is this all like pre-programmed, or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, too early to tell at the moment. What I will say is the event really was lacking detail. And I was looking for a clear path to a automated driving future, what Tesla is going to do to handle their, sort of certifications, what is the hardware that's going to power this? We heard they're going to over-spec it in this car. That's the only term that was, shared. Interestingly, Tesla taking the turn for wireless charging was really a tangible thing that we got out of this. This vehicle has no plug on it whatsoever, but we have no idea of the range, the battery capacity. What was interesting to me, though, was that if this does come to reality, the intention of Tesla is to sell this to individuals. So it's not something that's just going to be produced and used as an internal fleet. We will be able to buy one. And then I guess either have it as your own personal transportation or put it onto whatever this, you know, rideshare platform will be. I think in general, to back up for a second and go to a broader picture, the purpose of this event, I think, is to get people to understand that robots are kind of here, and it is going to be, alongside with AI, a really influential thing. And obviously, we review cars and transportation, but I really think this humanoid robot thing is very interesting and could be huge. And of course, Tesla really feels that way as well with Optimus, and seeing them walking around the crowds, I think, if anything, just paints the public perception figure that, okay, this is where the company's efforts are focused. It is clearly not on making the Model 3 performance more track capable. It is on robots and FSD and all and these things. And I think it's cool. I mean, the robot thing was really cool, seeing the humanoids walking around the crowd, serving drinks, interacting with people. That was neat. It may have been the first time we've seen a real public display of interacting with these Optimus robots before. So that sectioned off was really cool. On the other side of it, the robo-taxi itself, the robo-cab, is, I think, from a design perspective and usability, I think it looks awesome. I think it's really cool looking. I'm so into this whole thing. The thing with Tesla, though, is they're usually pretty good about making what they say, just not on the timeline at which they say it. And certainly there are many examples of stuff that they've still promised that have not come to fruition. Roadster comes to mind as something I'm really excited to see them make, but it just hasn't happened yet. So, you know, I think what we know about this is it's a two-seat autonomous vehicle that we have yet to see them prove in the public, in the real world, that they're autonomous platform can be driverless, unsupervised. Sounds like that's going to happen in California and Texas first. That's their intent. And, you know, timelines are what they are. We usually can only comment on when things happen, but at least we know the trajectory of the company. And I wouldn't get your hopes up about this. From a, you know, from our viewers' perspective, we have a lot of viewers that love to drive, love their electric cars, love all this stuff. It probably doesn't speak to them very much. It doesn't speak to my inner love of cars very much.
Excellent. Well, let's, yeah, very interesting. Tom, we'll come to you for, you know, the last word on this. I wonder, Tom, if they left out the specs because they've done that before and because there's a long lead time to the vehicles coming out. Look, the world changed. I'm trying to be compassionate to the team there. And they weren't able to deliver the Cybertruck with the original specs. There's certainly a more unfair version of that opinion that I just gave. But do you think they did that because they've been burned in the past, or just because they didn't want to? Or Tom, what do you think of this whole event?
Yeah, I mean, probably because they don't know the final specs yet. This is so early on. The thought that this is going to be on the roads in 2 years is sheer lunacy. It's you know, it's pie in the sky. I suppose they could make a few of them for geofenced, very small geofenced areas in Texas and California. And as you know, as critical as that sounds, I'm very happy and excited that Tesla's pushing the envelope with this. I want them to push the envelope. I want companies to push the envelope, but you do have to temper it with some, you know, realism. This isn't going to be out there anytime soon. Nobody is going to be able to buy one of these for $30,000. You know, personal people to buy them and drive them with the year starting, you know, 2022. You know, it's, you know, we're definitely deep into the 30s before somebody, well, maybe not deep into the 30s, but in the 30s before somebody will be able to buy one of these and let it drive them around unsupervised on any road they want to drive on. You know, I could see small geofenced areas operating on these, but the regulation alone, there's no way Tesla can get this approved to drive on areas that aren't geofenced, I wouldn't imagine, inside of this decade. That said, I'm glad, you know, they're out there doing this, that you have to push the envelope. The legacy brands won't. They're looking too much at next quarter's profits and investing tons of money into longer term projects like this is not on their favorite to-do list. You know, it's they're under extreme pressure by shareholders, and Tesla seems to just not care about that. They have the faith of their shareholders. The shareholders almost will let them do whatever they want and spend their money any way they want, because they say, look, they've been ahead of the curve so far. They seem to know what's coming next. We're not even thinking about what they're thinking about now and what they're spending money on and investing in. So it's worked so far, so I'm going to just let them continue to spend their money on programs that maybe everybody says is pie in the sky. The legacy brands can't get away with that. The board of directors will be fired. The CEO will be replaced. So we need a company like a Tesla to go out there and just say, this is crazy, but we're going to do it and we're going to make it work. That said, I think we all know the timelines are bogus. And, you know, I'm surprised that there's been such an outcry with the fact that it was a two-seater. If you read a lot of the comments on the other sides, it seems like everybody was so upset about that. That makes total sense in the world. For a small little, you know, robo-taxi, whatever you want to call it, the vast majority of like Uber and Lyft rides are one or two people. Vast majority. Once you get to over two plus, that percentage just drops. So I think that would be the way to go. That this type of a vehicle is what I would say works. How they're going to work out the whole charging infrastructure. You know, the wireless charging is great, but, you know, in theory, but we haven't really seen large scale applications of it for passenger vehicles anywhere. You know, not to say they can't overcome those hurdles. It works. We've seen it demonstrated. I've charged EVs wirelessly on wireless charging pads. I know it's not, you know, voodoo. You can make it work. So they can do that. And you know, a lot of people said Tesla could never build out a supercharger network, and look what they've done. So I'm not going to be the one to say they can't build out a wireless charging network, or at least enough to power these things. But there's so many questions left after last night. It was really, you know, I'm not going to say what comes to mind, but we got nothing. It was all fluff. But all that said, put to the side, I'm glad they did it, and I'm glad they continue to push the envelope. Eventually, they'll get there. If you just keep saying you're going to do something and you just keep putting money and effort into it, you end up doing it, even if it was impossible. So, you know, good on them for doing this. But last night left me, you know, I was hoping to come out of it saying, wow, this is, you know, they're really on track, and really didn't get much, you know. Kyle, what do you think about those butterfly doors? They look cool and everything. They're great for access and so forth, but I think this like robo-taxi thing needs to be bulletproof. People abuse stuff, and you know, I think conventional doors work the best. They seem to last the longest. They hold up to the most abuse. I thought about scissor doors because they're not going to come out and hit something. But even those, like we haven't been mass producing and making any other type of a door on a vehicle for 100 years to show that it can hold up to long-term abuse and, you know, hundreds of rides a week and everything. Almost seems like just do it the easiest way, and the best long-term policy would be just conventional type doors. But what do you think about those doors?
Yeah, I mean, it's still very possible that this will change by the time it reaches series production. The door situation, I mean, there are production cars with both doors that go up straight up like scissor doors. I own my Twizy has those, by the way, and I love them because it's got Lambo doors on the Twizy. And then I also had the great opportunity to drive the Mercedes SLS comes to mind with the doors that go straight up, sort of in a sense like this. But then we have the crazy Koenigsegg dihedral mounted doors that are really cool, and then the Aston Martin doors that are sort of like angel wings that come up a little bit. So there are plenty of different door types out there. But to Tom's point, all of those are on specialty supercars like the Twizy, not vehicles that are being driven every day with rideshare getting in and out. So I think that's probably the least hard thing to solve compared to this whole autonomy, you know, situation. And Tom, I agree. The biggest thing that I was left with was a lack of detailed information to ensure the investor community, which I am not, but I had a watch party at my house last night for this with some Tesla investors and Tesla haters. It was really fun to see everyone sort of battling it out as you know, some are making fun of Elon, some are cheering him on. It was really a great time. And, you know, so we had a really neutral balance as to, we should have live streamed it, but there wouldn't have been much to say. But everyone agreed there was just a lack of detailed information to convince anyone in any position, financially tied or not, that Tesla is any closer to solving autonomy than what we're experiencing in Model 3, Model Y, SX, and Cybertruck today.
Yeah, good shout.
And Dom, I want to apologize. Sorry, I know there's a delay. I want to apologize for our followers that tuned in last night. They thought we were doing a live stream. we made a mistake and scheduled our podcast for 9:30 last night. And a whole bunch of people tuned in. And I got a couple of emails. Pete Bremmy, who's a follower here, and you guys all know Pete. He's on vacation up in New Hampshire. He called me. He's like, "You guys are doing this live tonight?" I'm like, "Oh no." He's like, "Well, everyone's waiting." Yeah. So I messaged Tom. I'm like, take that down ASAP. Sorry, man, if you tuned in. It was just a mistake on our end.
Yeah, I tell you what, the design of that car, if they'd made that with steering wheel and pedals, and went, it's the Model 2 and it's going to have an LFP pack and be a three-door hatch and be small, and you might not love it in America, but the rest of the world are going to go mad over this. It changes the game overnight. But anyway, Dom, final word from you, my friend.
I just think there was a lot of detail like left unsaid. Like, we have to take his word for it. This is going to be capable of, like they said, it's going to be able to, like the Model 3 and Model Y using the software, but will be able to drive autonomously in Texas and California next year. I don't see any evidence of that with like my FSD car, that it's going to be, you know, that's the same software. I have older hardware, so maybe it's not quite as good as the newer cars with the autonomous driving, but I just don't see that it's ready. And I just want to see a lot more, you know, details on how this could possibly work, like with the inductive charging infrastructure, and what speed does this inductive charging, is it AC kind of, is it DC, like 25 kilowatts or 130, I think the record right now is up just over 100 kilowatts actually with inductive charging at the NREL labs or whatever it is in Oak Ridge. So it's just a lot up in the air. I don't know. It just feels like so concept-y right now. It was like, I can't put my faith in any of that really, that it's happening. And there's a lot of disappointment that there was no like Model 2 or, you know, that it's affordable electric vehicle that people can buy from Tesla that's, you know, slotted $25,000. A lot of people wanted that. And we got this, which I really like. I'm just skeptical. There's a lot of skepticism in the comments here. Our viewers are, overall, I think, are also very skeptical. There's, you know, not everybody, but there's a good amount of skepticism here, which I think makes sense to be pretty skeptical. You know, you look at the past timelines and things. But I don't know.
Okay.
Well, it is early days. Anyway, I think the biggest thing that is needed to achieve this driverless autonomy is their software and hardware platforms. There was no talk on that, which is super disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to so-called Juniper, which is the name that that someone has given the new Model Y when it comes out. Seeing some cars on the road, and as Kyle said, that anything to do with the cars is exceptionally interesting. You know, the number one selling passenger car in the world, and that being updated, if the update is as good as so-called Highland Model 3, I think we can call it Highland because it was found on some manufacturer stickers when somebody got one and for whatever reason had to tear it apart. And Tesla used the word Highland, even though Musk on social media denied that's ever a word internally. Well, they printed it on their stickers and stuck it on their parts, so we can call it Highland. That's an incredible upgrade to a fantastic car. And I think Juniper's going to be amazing with Model Y. Really looking forward to that. Hopefully it moves things forward. You know, we saw this week in the UK, Tesla released, I think they put the big battery, the new battery from the Model Y, in a Model 3 rear wheel drive long range and put it on sale in the UK market with 436 miles of range, WLTP, that's 700 kilometers. I get really excited over stuff like that because you're heading into some rarefied air there, aren't you? You're heading into EQS territory with knocking on 450 miles of range, WLTP. And so I think they do some incredible things in automotive, but they just don't want to be known as an automotive company. Maybe that's as far as the company growth story goes. But which would be an awful shame because, you know, robots and cabs and things. I mean, nah. Okay, let's move on because we've got some good stuff to talk about with cars and charging and
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
talking about approaching things with a hefty dose of cynicism's the wrong word, but you know, wait until I see it with my own eyes. Kyle, you finally got a chance to go to the Gravity Charging Hub in New York City, an incredible facility. You know, we've featured them on this podcast. Tom's gone to visit them before. They make a big deal of saying, you know, 500 kilowatt DC fast charging. Everyone can get that speed. So, you know, the obvious question, I think there's something like 20 charges or so. And it's like, oh, great, we'll do the math. 20 times 500. So, you know, you've got a 10 megawatt connection to your parking garage. Yes. Is that right? And they're like, well, so like, that's the easy one. You finally got to go yourself and see a lot of BZ4Xs and it with your own eyes. Kyle, tell us about it.
Yeah, so I went to this hub, and first of all, I think props to Gravity for opening up a fantastic charging hub in the place where charging is needed the most, in the city center. And I love the idea of a high-power, multi-port DC fast charging hub, especially in areas that have high vehicle traffic, a lot of visitors, and very little level two infrastructure, really infrastructure beyond this, other than a couple charging hubs. New York is extremely underserved for charging. So we have to give huge props for them just to build out this facility. What really bothered me when this launched was they made it sound like it was some magical power thing. Like, you know, they didn't need to do any grid upgrades. They can do 500 kilowatts at every port. You know, and I was like, okay, but what is magical about what they're doing? I couldn't find anything that was, you know, it just seemed like press release fluff. They got a lot of media attention from huge magazines, huge outlets that were writing about this as if it was something special. And really all it is just a normal, typical, as far as I can tell, distributed DC charging system, which is awesome. I mean, this is what we like to see for charging sites, but it's not this magical, crazy next generation thing. It seems like they're using just pretty standard AC to DC rectifiers that are all, you know, load shared together, and they have a nice switching matrix that can distribute the power available to each individual port. Now, if you were to max out every single one of these ports here, we calculated the total conversion power on site would limit you to 90 kilowatts per port. Not every car can do 500 at the same time. And that's fine. I mean, that's okay as long as they are disclosing this. And they really didn't do that in any of their presentations. Tom got to meet with their CEO. I did not. I would like to go back if they want to have me back after this video. I don't know. I mean, I think the installation's great. The hardware is interesting. There's nothing really bad here. It's just a normal run-of-the-mill distributed DC fast charging site that we see at every Tesla supercharger, chem power sites, the list goes on and on. So I'm just wasn't sure what the magic was here.
No, absolutely. And that was the bit they didn't say, which was, you know, 90 kilowatts if they max out it, which is fine, because as you point out in the video, you know, a lot of cab drivers are there and a lot of BZ4Xs were there, which are charging really slowly. So what are your thoughts, Kyle, on, you know, cab drivers using this? Should it be reserved for members of the public, as it were? Or, as I've said on my podcast before, like, you know, a charge point is a charge point, and if it makes you money, then you don't care who uses it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to from the outside to dictate who gets to use it, who pays what, and the usage of that. But certainly it's, I think, almost very possible that you could achieve 500 kilowatts at this site, assuming the charging power is capable of doing that, which I think should be met with a question mark, because they're only rated for 500 amps on the cables. So we saw, you know, liquid cooling, Huber Sooner cables. It's possible they're pushing them beyond the rated current of the cables, which is totally possible to do with software and hooking it up to a high power charger. The cable is dumb. It will push through as much energy till it catches on fire that you want. Mm-hmm. So it's possible they're running past 500 amps. And their conversion power stacks are 360 kilowatt cabinets that are linked together. So if you, in theory, the way they're rating this 500 kilowatt site is if you are at 1,000 volts perfectly and your car is pulling 500 amps, then you, in theory, could get 500 kilowatts. The question mark is that even possible? Because most charging equipment have a crossover period. They can go up to 500 amps, up to 1,000 volts, but not at the same time. They have a total conversion power limit. Now, at least at this particular site, there's plenty of charging modules. So it's possible they'll just spin up another cabinet and another cabinet and get that, you know, amperage up there. We don't know until we can maybe get a Li Auto Mega or something over there to test it. But either way, none of that, even if they are able to output 500 kilowatts, is really that unique. We're already starting to see 640 kilowatt, 720 kilowatt, all in one, or sorry, not all in one, but site level load distributed services that are pretty much off the shelf that you can just buy now. So Autel has a 640 kilowatt. You drop it in the ground, put four ports up in there. It'll give one car everything and then start to split as you plug in more. So yeah, I don't know. Tom, you know more than I do about this. You went there. I really should have watched your video before I went there to film this. I did not have a chance to. But yeah, what do you think? Was there anything? Where was the secret sauce?
So if you watch the video, you probably... we wouldn't have learned too much, because I did speak with the CEO, and the CEOs are CEOs. He's not an engineer. I actually asked for a follow-up interview with like one of their company engineers, and they said, sure, you can come back. And because I said, I really want to get into the nuts and bolts of how the system works, how you're also claiming that you didn't have to do any, they said they had to do no utility upgrades to do that, to install that site there. They didn't have to request more power from Con Ed, and that their software somehow, you know, they did work with the utility on taking excess power from like other local buildings and managing it. But that's not unique. There's other companies out there that make software stuff that allows you to share power. But I didn't get into the nuts and bolts. I was going to follow up, and then I just never followed up. I've been busy and I haven't had time. I assume I have an open invite, so maybe I'll revisit that at some point and go there. It'd be great if when you're in New Jersey or New York area at some point, maybe the two of us go over there and do an interview and kind of tag team them. I think that would be fun. So maybe we'll plan that at some point in the future. But what excited me about it, Kyle, was a couple things. They were focusing on some of the urban areas that are underserved. Like New York City, for ages, I've been driving EVs for 15 years now. There's nowhere to charge in the city. There was no places where you could DC fast charge, really. There were a couple private ones and private garages, but they were going to focus on these underground garages. And you saw the equipment mounted to the wall. Nobody's making equipment that's specialized for like tight spaces, garages. You can't just sit, you know, a Delta EVgo charger in some of these underground parking garages. There's not enough room. And their equipment is specialized to be mounted on the wall, on the ceiling, with overhead cables to specially service these areas where we are so underserved. The big cities in this country have terrible infrastructure for electric vehicles. And that's where we should have the best infrastructure, because it makes the most sense. The cars in the city just driving around all day long. You could drive all day long and drive 80 or 70, 80 miles. That's a stretch to even do. So cities are perfectly suited for EVs. And there's also the problem with pollution, a smog in the congestion in the city. So you'd be eliminating that with the EVs. So I was so excited to see that. After talking to him, he's like, you know, our first step is cities. We wanna be the energy provider for electric vehicles in these congested areas, underground parking garages and so forth. And to me, that was more important than his equipment being unique. His business plan was unique, and that was enough for me that this is what they were gonna do. And he also has those pole mounted DC fast chargers. They're not super high powered ones. I think they're 50 kilowatt that they're going to start mounting on poles, on utility poles. So that was the concept of how they're approaching charging was much more important to me than, yeah, they have this cutting edge equipment that nobody else has. Even if it was the same, they're going to deploy it in areas where we don't have it. So that was what I was excited about.
Yeah, I think their dispenser is relatively small and can be wall mounted. It's just a small box rather than these tall cabinets that we're used to seeing. But that's not necessarily unique. I mean, Eaton, others have now this small dispenser that are sort of satellite dispensers. But yeah, I mean, certainly their form factor that they spec'd. Now, I thought it was interesting. It said Shenzhen Auto Company Limited was what was badged on the dispenser. I wonder if they just went and purchased this equipment, or because it didn't seem, nothing on the equipment said gravity other than the vinyl wrap over it. So that's just a question. It doesn't really matter to me, but I'm not sure if they just purchased all of this or if they developed it from the ground up. Not sure it really makes a difference to the end user, but did you happen to get any read on that?
No. I actually, when I went there, it was last minute. I was going to the New York Auto Show. And I contacted the company last minute and said, look, I want to use your chargers. Do you think I can have an interview? And they're like, oh, yeah, the CEO will come out. So I honestly mentally wasn't prepared to do an investigation and everything. I was literally in and out of there in like 35 minutes, did the interview, charged my car and drove away and said, we need to circle back and do a deep dive here. But I want an engineer, not just the CEO. And they said, whenever you want to come. And then I just dropped the ball. I never went back. So no, I didn't spend a lot of time there. I was actually charging so I could go over to the New York Auto Show.
Yeah, no worries. Well, I'm happy to join you for the next trip. I think there's just this trend of maybe a little bit of over exuberance in the DC fast charging community when a lot of it is just the same basic equipment recycled and repurposed and reshaped. And I'm not saying that this is this for sure, but from the outside looking in, that's what it looks like. So that was our video. Well, and I'd love to join you for the next interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was excited in that video. And really it was just because, you know, first of all, I get excited when I see things that make me happy. I think that the followers know that here. I'm kind of animated guy. But it was the fact, Kyle, that I could go and DC fast charge my car in New York City. You know, I live 50 miles from New York City. And for all the years I've been driving, now finally we have EVs where I can drive the city and come home. But for years, I couldn't make that round trip, especially in the winter. And I had to like find a slow level two charger and charge on the way or there. But finally, now the gravity was there. I'm like, this is great. I'm DC fast charging in a public DC fast charging garage in New York City. And that was my exuberance was over the fact that finally we have it, not necessarily like, oh yeah, you know, everything's rated to be 500 kilowatts and this is all unique equipment. That was going to be the follow-up, but I didn't follow up.
Yeah, props to them, seriously, because New York City, you know, it's also my home, needs high power DC charging. I remember my dad used to commute in from Connecticut in his BMW i3 every day, and he had a Rex at the time. And his goal every day was to run Eco Plus, crack the window a little bit, and try and stretch it in and home without kicking on the range extender. And only one time did it work.
You guys don't know the struggle. You know, back to 2009, driving the Mini Cooper, that, you know, if I didn't put the charger in at my restaurant, I couldn't make the round trip. And guys, there wasn't a single public charging station in all of New Jersey, not even level two. So I could have plugged into an outlet level one, but this is how we lived. Like, I have a blog way back in the day of people would tell me their method to make it to work and back. And it would be to put a blanket on, make sure the heat's off. I got pictures of people driving with mitts on and hats.
Oh my gosh.
And like, you know, I even had a friend that used to put a ceramic heater in his car and in his garage and had it on a timer, and it would turn on an hour before he went to work. So it would warm up the cabin and the seats would be nice and warm. So when he got in his car in the morning, everything would be warm and he wouldn't have to turn the heat on in the winter. So like, you guys don't have to live with that. This was like 2010, 2011, 2012, you know, back when Kyle's talking about his dad, who was a very, you know, out of spec Dave was an early adopter. He used to come to my electric car meets, you know, 10, 12 years ago. So it was different back then.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, we miss Out of Spec Dave on our battery bargain shows on Wednesdays. We've ended up doing them live quite a lot of the time. And, you know, Dave actually has a real job, so it's hard to do it. But we might record a few going forward because we really miss him on that show. He's got so much to knowledge to impart in terms of, you know, buying and selling cars because he's not shy to do that. Before we move on, Dom, anything to add on? I saw Tesla have bought... not least, but bought a bit of dirt in Queens, about 40,000 square feet. It's a parking lot at the minute, about 55 spaces and 3 accessible spaces. I don't imagine they're doing that for giggles. And so, you know, that's going to be, you'd max out as many superchargers as you can there. So I know that'll be certainly well received in that area. Dom, any thoughts on how we charge our cars in the city?
Just, you know, level 2 is great. I mean, I like to see this gravity thing. That's I hadn't heard about that Tesla lot there. And I was just, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, you know, it'd be nice, like a little, a few levels of parking garage, you know, and put your chargers in there so you can, you know, you go vertical basically with it so you can get more than just 20 cars charging. But then again, I don't know if that's a lot of structure, and they would have to charge, I guess, for parking as well to make it kind of equitable, like make it pay for itself, basically. Yeah.
Car Panda says, you have real jobs. These are them. Well, wouldn't call this a real job, my friend. My wife's a nurse, and making content about cars, sadly, makes a bit more money than being a nurse. And so, you know, being a teacher, a nurse, saving lives, that's a real job. What we do here, we're just chatting about cars. And we are very fortunate to be able to do this and make a living from it. Not a spectacular one, but we're very lucky. And let's talk about another video that was out 3 days ago, Kyle. You were very lucky to have one of the world's leading experts on EV charging, Brandon Flash, joined Out of Spec Reviews for this one, doing a 10% challenge on EV6. What do we need to know about this?
Sorry, nope, I had my thing muted. Yep. What do we need to know about this? Well, EV6 is not incredibly efficient. It's pretty good, but then the charging performance is just mega. So it did really well. But wait till you guys see some upcoming 10% challenges we have coming. Ioniq 6 long-range rear-wheel drive. Ryan just ran that this week. Whoa. Right up there with Taycan. Very close in the... Yeah, right up there with previous-gen Taycan. Right up there with Lucid. And it's so much less expensive, so really, really great. Then i7 actually didn't do too as bad as I thought it would. We're gonna run EQS today and some others, so yeah, a bunch of 10% challenges coming. It's my favorite test that we do. It simulates a road trip that you would go on, where you arrive to a charger at 10% state of charge for 15 minutes, and then see how far you can go after that 15 minute charge. Yeah. When the car's all set up, and we drive at 80 miles an hour for this test to really simulate a highway driving situation. So yeah, really fun, and plenty of EGMP stuff to come.
And you also ran down the i7 and the Mercedes-Benz EQS, but you ran them down properly alongside Jordan. How did that go?
Yeah, what we're doing for our highway range test now, and it's really enabled by the Lucid Air and also the Cybertruck that we have both here at the office, is exportable high power. So both the Lucid Air and the Cybertruck allow us to export 240 volts up to 40 amps, where we're able to charge cars on the side of the road, which is really convenient. And we run our 70 mile per hour highway range test now for every car till they stop moving, till they completely die. And that's really important, I think, to do for us, because I like to see how the cars perform at zero. We certainly log the mileage at when the car indicates 0%, when the car can't maintain 70 miles an hour anymore, and when the car completely dies, because no one can agree on what is the ending point for a 70 mile per hour highway range test. To me, my view is when it can no longer maintain 70 miles an hour. That's the number we put on the website. But a lot of people want to know, what is it at 5%, 1%, 10%, whatever. So we log all those things. And then when they watch the video, people can say, oh, I feel comfortable with this number. And that's what they will use. And we recently ran the long range rear wheel drive configurations, which are the range specs of both the i7 and the EQS in this challenge and this range test. And we have another one going up right now that I'm working on posting in the middle of this podcast. And it's sorry for being distracted. And it's exciting. I mean, it's really cool to see the EQS with a slightly larger battery, you know, 1% larger battery, go significantly farther than the i7. And it just comes down to shape and maybe some drivetrain efficiencies and other things. But the best way to sum up the difference between these two German luxury sedans is the i7 is a great car, amazing car. Actually, even another class above EQS in terms of quality and ride and noise and all of these things. But the EQS is the better electric car. It charges better, has significantly more range, well over 400 miles at 70 miles an hour, an impressive result, no question, for a car that really hasn't been known for its efficiency and range. It's just been known for being ugly. And there's a reason it's ugly, and it is because it goes really far.
Well, the new ones won't be ugly because they're getting rid of EQS. They're going to be called S-Class Electric. And it's what they should have done. It's what the buyers want, because then they put the star back on the bonnet, and then that was the first thing they did, because their buyers went, what's that? I want an S-Class with a big battery. And so, hey, give the people what they want, unfortunately. Now, Dom, you and I had a chat this week, not on the air, not on any of our podcasts, but you were saying that you did a ton of miles in the BMW i7, flew home,
yeah,
or at the airport, got back in your Model 3 and was like, what's wrong with this car? Everything makes a noise. And you're like, oh, no, I've just spent the last 3 days on the i7. Is it that good?
Oh, man. Getting out of the i7 after driving it to, I guess, a couple thousand miles, I got in my car and the thing was so noisy. Wasn't any more noisy than it was before, but after driving, it's hard to even imagine. It was overwhelming, the noise going down the road, even like at 30 miles an hour. It was like, what is even going on? I can't believe my car is like such a bucket of bolts. This thing, man, like the EQS is like more efficient, but I would take that. And they're about the same price, the base price, but I would take that i7 all day long and every day on Sunday. It's like, if as a car to drive, you just feel like such a boss driving that thing. It just gets big and roomy and luxurious and quiet and has just a rear-wheel drive. I think it has all the power you need. I wouldn't even want the all-wheel drive version of that. It just feels so good the way the power comes on the rear-wheel drive, but I don't know if it can be that magical in all-wheel drive or not. But yeah, and I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and he had a BMW 7 Series, I think from the 80s, and it sounds like the 7 Series has always been like a really high level kind of vehicle that it's not on our radar over here so much in the US, but man, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing like a electric from the ground up, a 7 Series BMW, just to make it more, because it wasn't a great EV, but it was a great, just a great car. Well, I would say the ADAS, the steering, the auto steering, and the dynamic cruise control, I preferred it to the way Tesla implements it. You could change lanes, you could take control of the steering, and it doesn't turn off. There were warnings if you looked away, I guess. But mostly it was just like sitting there, and it's like a hands-free system, and just glancing at the mirrors, and then it would put on its turn signal and change lanes when it prompts you to look at the mirrors. It was just, man, that car.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in love.
It was great to see it all cleaned up too, because we did the whole coast to coast, which do we have an ETA on the first video yet, Kyle?
I think 2 weeks. Wow. Let me look. 26th. Wow. Yeah, 2 weeks from Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, there's a ton of footage, so it's going to take a while to spit out.
It's going to be a month of content. So it's 4 videos that Jordan's editing up, and so it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, but so you see how it fared during that. It's kind of interesting to see how, because we talked about, you know, the 10% challenge with the Ioniq 6, and we had all those cars in this whole head-to-head nine times race, and it's going to be great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to sharing the results of that with everybody.
Excellent. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Chevy Silverado, because we've got a range test to get into with Tom, and then we got some new stats and new data coming up for the 25 model year. So Tom, you did one of your 70 mile an hour range tests on the Chevy Silverado RST, and you know, the current model year, 24 model year, that's out right now. A write-up, as always, on insideevs.com. I guess we want to know, you know, the massive number, the mileage, the consumption, and all the details, Tom.
I'm getting messages that my connection might be getting better now. We'll see. There was a problem in this area here, and I know that they're working on it. So, I had the Silverado EV RST first edition, and did some charging recordings. The range test is what we're talking about now. No surprise with the consumption. You know, these electric trucks all seem to get right around 2 miles per kilowatt hour. The Cybertruck does a little bit better at highway speeds, but you know, the Rivian maybe a slightly better itself, but they're all right around. It's just easy to say you're going to get 2 miles per kilowatt hour with an electric truck when you're driving on the highway, because depending on the conditions, it's right around there. And that's what I ended up with. You know, it's got a huge battery, as we all know. GM or Chevy, I think, says that it's a 205 kilowatt hour of usable capacity. I was able to pull 213.7, I think, out of it in this range test. Went 441 miles.
Oh, that's a big number.
Yeah, which is a huge number. And you know, people are commenting also, I was able to do it without stopping, which is a huge accomplishment for myself. But I set out to do it for a reason, because in GM's infotainment system, where it tracks your energy usage, how many kilowatt hour you're using for that trip, it resets every time you turn it off. You can't let it accumulate for, let's say, since last charge or for this trip number one data. So I really wanted that picture of it, the complete range test with how many kilowatt hour it pulled. There's no way to do it. If you get up and get out of the car, it resets. So I set out that day specifically to do this whole test, 7 hours without stopping. And yeah, 441 miles. And it did great. You know, I mean, Kyle's range test the Silverados. He's done comparisons there, right there. If you're watching on YouTube, 213.7 kilowatt hour used, which is just bonkers. You know, 441 miles. It did really well. And you know, a lot of people talk about how, oh, it's disgusting. I've seen comments that, you know, GM puts such 200 plus kilowatt hour battery packs. You know, these are supposed to be environmentally friendly. You know, and all this. Listen, it's what a lot of people need. Use the right tool for the right job. People asked GM for range. They said, you know, you want us to buy your electric trucks. We need them to do a day's duty. We need them to tow, to haul, to go far distances. And in order to do that, we need a big battery. It's the only way to do it. We can't lose an hour of day labor while somebody is charging the car. So, you know, it's use the right tool for the job, and General Motors did it. They put a gigantic battery in the truck, and it's going to work for a lot of people. If you need something differently, then get a smaller battery vehicle. You know, the Lightning has a much smaller battery. The total capacity is around 155, usables 131 kilowatt hour. So there's an option right there. You know, Rivian has different battery options with their pickup trucks. The Cybertruck has its own size battery. So it's good that we have options. If you need long range with a pickup truck, electric, and you want an electric truck, you know, the Silverado is great. And it also charges like a beast. And I'm going to have some videos coming up on that soon. I did a lot of charge recordings. I mean, the damn thing, you plug it in, it pulls 350 kilowatts and it just holds it. It doesn't, you don't get that usual, oh, 3 minutes and now, oh, here you start going down, and 12 minutes into the charging session, it's doing 150 kilowatts, which so many vehicles do. This thing just rips. And I added 100 kilowatt hour in 18 minutes. 100 kilowatt hours bigger than most electric vehicles' batteries, and it added it in 18 minutes. I mean, it's just, you know, that's what you need. You know, we need a lot of range and we need fast charging. I got to give Chevy props. I have a comparison video coming out next. This video took me a while to shoot because I think I have 15 categories where I compare it to the Lightning. I stand in front of both and I say, this has this, this does this, this does this. So this is going to take me a while to edit. It's like, I mean, if you see my editing software, there's like 1,000 cuts and B-rolls and everything. Colin knows what I'm talking about. It takes so long when you edit those type of videos where there's tons of overlays and everything. But I compare it to the Lightning. And, you know, at the end, I have to admit, you know, while I'm not selling my Lightning right now, I like the Lightning. I'm keeping the Lightning. If I was in the market to buy it now, I don't know, you know, and you guys know that's saying a lot, because how often do I brag about how much I love the Lightning? You know, the Chevy did a great job with the Silverado. They really did.
It is the truck to have. If you're going to buy an electric truck, Silverado, big ass battery, big charging. That's all you need.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
And for 2025, so you've done that range test now, but now they've announced the 2025 ones even more range, maybe.
Yeah, like, thanks for that. I've just done the range test.
I know. Yeah, this was a tough week for me because I did the range test on the Silverado, and I just yesterday did the range test on the Lucid Air Pure. Now, the 2025 Lucid Air Pure with the Aero 19-inch wheels, that's, you know, not, it doesn't have the huge battery of the other Lucid Air. It's only 84 kilowatt hours, but I did a Kyle Connor and I pulled into the charger, the charging station. And as I'm doing my final wrap up talking on camera, the car just shut down.
Wow.
So now I can't open up the motorized charge port.
Oh,
because so the 12 volt shut down.
Well, look, the car completely powered off. So even the displays won't light up.
Silverado?
No. The Lucid Air Pure I'm talking about. Yesterday, I did the Lucid Air Pure range test.
But that shouldn't happen because I ran our Lucid multiple times to where it, you know, dies. Yeah. And then the 12 volt keeps it alive for 30 minutes.
I couldn't get anything to light up. I'm stepping on the brake, you know, in the car with the key. Nothing powers up. So I actually shut off the recording because I'm like, okay, guys, I'll be back because I have to be able to plug this thing in. And what happened was I sat for like 5 minutes, Kyle, and then got out of the car, got back in the car, stepped on the brake, and it lit up. So I was able to just quick press the thing. But I used like 83.5 kilowatt hour, and it's the 84 kilowatt hour.
Wow.
You know, so I pretty much drained it. And
yeah, but I wonder if that happened because like the 12 volt shouldn't shut off when the high voltage contactors open up. It legally, the car, I think, needs to maintain hazard lights for like 12 hours or something. Yeah. Like there's a legal mandate as to how long the 12 volt systems need to stay up. I wonder if the car just thought you got out of it.
Yeah, but if it did, why wouldn't it wake up once I pressed the brake?
Yeah, but the fact that it did wake back up means the 12 volt didn't die and it was.
No, the 12 volt didn't die. No, the 12 volt didn't die, but I couldn't get, as I'm sitting there, like a minute after I pull into the station, I'm talking on camera and all of a sudden, boop, everything goes black. I'm like, well, I guess that's it. It's the end of the range test.
Yeah, sounds like a reboot or a bug, but I don't think it has to do with the 12 volt necessarily dying because it did come back on.
Yeah, it did. I got out. I waited like 5 minutes. Then I got out of the vehicle, like, you know, went back in and then stepped on the brake and it woke up. And I was like, okay, let me open up this charge port.
So on our Lucid, the experience we had with the range test, it did 510.5 miles in the Grand Touring trim. And then I just kept it floored and it did like another, I want to say 20 miles past that at like 3 miles an hour. It just like rolled and kept rolling and rolling. And we were just going until it stopped moving and it finally died on the hill. But there was a lot below zero. I wonder, I have to test a Pure. I think we're going to swap our GT for a Pure soon, but it seems like really magically efficient. Can you share the efficiency of your test?
So yeah, it ended up, well, first of all, I need to qualify. I had 10 mile an hour headwinds for much of the test. Now it was a tailwind for half the test, but you don't make it up. It doesn't negate that. You know, it helps you, it offsets some of it, but it does not, you don't completely do that. So I ended up with 4.4. Is it 4.4 or 4.5? Christ, I got a bad memory. I think I ended up with 4.4 because it was 4.5 most of the test, but then I ended up overall with 4.4 miles per kilowatt hour. So, which is the best I've ever gotten on a Lucid Air. I've on all my range tests, I've gone between 4.1 and 4.3 on numerous Lucid Air range tests. So it is the most efficient one, but it has a much smaller battery, only 84 kilowatt hour. So, you know, I mean, you could do the math, you figure out where I ended up. I didn't hit 400 miles. The highway EPA range rating is 408 on the 2025 Pure rear wheel drive with the 19 inch aero wheels, which is what I had on it. So I came short of that, but, you know, 4.4 over 360 plus miles with a headwind. Oh, and it was cold. It was in the 50s, the temperature. So that makes a big difference, you know, between 75, 80 degrees and no wind. I think if I were to ran this, honestly, in the summer with a 2-3 mile an hour wind at 80 degrees, I think I would have hit about 385-ish. So I was a little bit shy of that.
So it's interesting. So the look at the efficiency, of course, it's not, when we look at efficiency comparisons, we always try and run the same comparable cars on the same day, which is why we just ran, you know, 5 Model 3s together yesterday, which was pretty crazy, or 2 days ago. But our Lucid range test, we had, of course, the much bigger battery and the dual motor. We're also at slightly higher elevation. It's not like we're at 12,000 feet and you're at sea level, but you're pretty close. It's about a 5,000 foot difference, which does impact air density. Yeah. But we got 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour, if I remember correctly, in our Lucid range test with the dual motor, with the big battery. So I would have expected 4.7, 4.8. from the Pure. That's where my head was coming from. Just because Ioniq 6, which that video just went up right now, that did 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour, Ioniq 6 rear drive. And then Model 3 long range rear drive did 4.8 at 70 miles an hour, almost 5 miles per kilowatt hour.
That's bonkers. 4.8 is absolutely bonkers. I do have to admit that, I said I really think the wind played a role here because it was like 10 mile an hour and it was a headwind for half of the trip. So think about that. That's almost like me driving 80 miles an hour, you know, and makes a big difference. That's number one. The temperature was number two. I did precondition to DC fast charge and went to a DC fast charger and charged up. So I was trying to warm the battery up, but the battery was sitting overnight in a 55 degree garage, even though it was in the 30s overnight, but it was in my garage. My garage is around 50, 55 degrees. So a cold soak battery at 55 degrees, I preconditioned, I DC fast charged. I think in ideal conditions, this would have been right around where you're talking, Kyle, 4.7, 4.8. I'm sure that played a role. I know Lucid was disappointed with my results, but my results are my results. You know, me and Kyle don't have any, hand in, we drive the cars and where they end up, you know, sometimes
all the time they're disappointed with our results. Yeah, I'm like, okay, we'll build a different car then. I don't know what to tell you.
It is what it is. And I mentioned in this video, if I did this range test 5 times, even on 5 consecutive days, I'd have 5 different results. So don't live and die by what Kyle does and what I do, saying, oh, that car can go this way. No, it went that far on that day, on those weather conditions. I had some traffic issues. New Jersey's getting harder and harder for me to do range tests. I was not able to maintain 70 miles an hour like I usually can. I dropped below 70 for 4 or 5 miles. So then if I was going 68, the next 4 or 5 miles, I ticked it up to 72. The police shut the turnpike for like 5 minutes. So I like came to a stop and sat there for 5 minutes and then just went. So that really won't affect the range. Just sitting with the vehicle turned off for 5 minutes doesn't affect it. But this was not by any means a perfect range. It was probably the worst one that I've ever done. And it's making me really think that the congestion is getting worse and worse here in New Jersey. I try to go between morning rush hour and evening rush hour. I think I'm going to have to start running these overnight, which sucks. I don't want to be up till 4 a.m. or all night driving on the turnpike, but I think it'll be the best result. But also, it's colder at night. You don't get the sun warming up. So there's no easy answer here. But in any event, the thing is, that's real world, and people are driving their cars into real world. So that is, it is what it is. It was a tough day. Yesterday was a tough day, but we ended up with, decent result, and the result's the result.
Good stuff. That new Silverado set of specs, I've just brought them up here. So the new LT trim starts at $75,195 for 2025 model year. Sorry, this is a bit of a stats download. Sorry about that. So the Silverado LT trim has the dual motors, 645 horsepower, 408 miles from the standard battery. You can add the LT premium package for $6,800, and that reduces the mileage to 390, but you get the 22s and Super Cruise and the Multiflex midgate for that upgrade. It does, the LT trim for next year's Silverado does get the full $7,500 federal tax credit. That's a really big deal, actually. And so it runs on standard 18-inch wheels. You've got the big displays inside. It's all the same. Towing capacity, 12,500 pounds or 5,670 kilograms, and a payload of 1,800 pounds or about 800 kilograms. The RST base price, the RST now starts at $89,395, which is a reduction from the current base price of $96. But there's a standard range battery. There's also the max battery for $97,895. That'll be 460 miles, they say. And I think all the juice already was in the work truck story, because the work truck's actually going to come with the three battery sizes for 2025 model year, and it starts at $57,095. So it's comparable to a Ford F-150 Lightning Pro. And no EPA range on the base one, as far as I know, but extended range 422 miles, max range 492. So that's where that number comes from. It's the max range work truck, big battery, almost 500 miles. Insane. But if you're towing, if you've got payload, you've got elevation, that range drops really quickly with trucks. So,
yeah.
But if you are going to tow, that's the truck you want to tow
with. That's the one.
Yeah. So what is leading to the more range? Do we know for sure? Is it the new cell chemistry?
Oh, it might be.
Yeah, there's no details on that. So I think it's basically, I feel like it's more like tires and weights and things like that. I don't know if there's any changes to the chemistry. Maybe Nebula knows?
Yeah, Nebula, if he's in the comments, would probably know. I'm pretty sure GM had a chemistry update. And I don't see how these could have gone farther with the same capacity in the tougher EPA range testing of this year. Mm-hmm. Like that, and most every other car is losing range this year. Ioniq 6 went from 363 miles of range to 341 or 342 just because of the EPA rating change. So I have no idea. I would think they have more capacity now.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
You'd think so, but yeah, they didn't put any of those details in the press release. But I think this leads into our next story, though. I don't know if you want to introduce that, Martin.
Yeah. So, with the Ultium.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. The Ultium, as a consumer-facing name, that's playing myself a podcast of me talking. I don't want to do that. And so I got myself in my ears twice. That's just too much of me already. Ultium platform is no more. Of course, the Ultium Cells LLC is the legal joint venture with LG. Earlier this year, we heard that GM would start sourcing cells from Samsung and others as well, which is entirely sensible. Ultium I contend Ultium was more than a branding exercise. It was an externally facing name. They advertised it in the Super Bowl. Ultium technology didn't mean anything. A bit like a Toyota RAV4 Prime. What's the Prime word mean? It doesn't mean anything, but it's like most marketing things. Ultium didn't really mean anything, but it was public facing. It was their LG project. And they announced Wednesday, that Ultium is all gone, just as they start to sell Ultium cars in some half-decent numbers. So where do we want to go with this? Because we haven't got too long left. Let's first of all talk about why they did it. They say because for their future cars, they need a range of cells, suppliers, batteries. That seems very sensible. Of course, Ultium was also a strategy. You know, Ultium began with the cells, made its way into being all about a powertrain and, a technological platform and architecture, if you like, in kind of automotive language. And so Ultium was pouch cells made by LG. And on paper, it makes perfect sense, because if you're making a cheaper EV, we'll use fewer modules. And we're going to make millions of these pouch cells, and we're going to make them at scale. And then if you want to make a big work truck, you just put more modules in. Pros and cons to that, as Tom's finding with his low voltage Equinox. But the minute you need to bring other people in, if you've got a joint venture with LG called Ultium, I have my own theories on that. I can save it to the end because it's not the most interesting thing. But the Ultium name is all gone. They say they're going to use a different set of form factors, of suppliers, of batteries, according to the cars that are coming as part of that announcement. The Bolt will be part of a Bolt family, which is interesting. So that does sound like, and they're going to aim to start it at the pricing that the 2023 Bolt left off at, which is good. That was 28, I think. And so that'll be federal tax credit applicable. I'm not sure if they were including that or not in when they were saying they want to pick up where they left off with the Bolt, but that'll use, it won't be LG pouch cells. That'll be an LFP pack to get that price in. And I can't think of any other huge headlines. We'll go straight to Tom. I want to hear your thoughts, Tom, on this, because, as an owner, someone who's charged with the Ultium technology, and, Ultium was it before they ever made the cars, and they've only just started making the vehicles, had a great Q3. That really kept the fire burning for a long time, and now they got rid of it. So, Tom, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So, while we don't know for sure why they decided to, dump the Ultium name, I like along your line of thinking that it was probably a co-branding issue that now, since they're going out and using other battery suppliers, their partners said, that name belongs to our entity, that, if you're going to go out and share, you use batteries from other suppliers, you can't call them Ultium, because that's our branding that we co-branded with you. That could be part of it. I don't like the fact that they're ending the Ultium name, only because to me, it kind of, it telegraphs uncertainty. Like they same thing with Ford, with announcing that they are going to go to plug-in hybrids, they're going to change their strategy. It just kind of gives people uncertainty about the whole electric vehicle market. People that are following it closely, that, maybe we're on the fence to buy Ford electric vehicles, and then they announce, these things aren't selling as well as we thought they were going to. So maybe we're going to make some plug-in hybrids. Same thing with GM. Now, it's not that they're saying they're going to make, which the opposite. They're saying they're not going to do what Ford did with plug-in hybrids. But people see that, General Motors was hanging their hat on Ultium technology, on the Ultium platform, Ultium battery cells, Ultium this. You said they had a Super Bowl ad. Everything's Ultium, Ultium, Ultium. I think even their chargers are branded Ultium, right? The EVgo chargers, GM, Ultium. And now, it's not Ultium anymore. So I think to the casual consumer, they're looking at this stuff saying, this is just, I don't even think the companies know what the hell they're doing with electric vehicles. They keep changing their minds. They're going to make EVs. Nah, they're going to make plug-in hybrids. Ultium's the future. Nah, Ultium's not the future. I don't like what this telegraphs to people. And I know what's in a name, and a lot of people are going to say, it's just a name, Tom. And you're right, it's just a name. But I just don't like how it signals. It signals that the company doesn't know what the hell they're doing, in my opinion. That they're just making willy-nilly decisions month to month. They were hanging their hat on Ultium, and now, well, yeah, it's not Ultium anymore. So that's what I don't like about it personally. Is it a big deal? I guess it's not a big deal as far as, you know, the products are going to be concerned, but I just don't like what this telegraphs personally.
That's good points, Tom. Yeah.
Your thoughts, Tom?
Oh, I was just thinking, you know, I'm not really sure what's going on here exactly, because they were saying they want to change the different form types and, you know, prismatic cells, but that was all part of the Ultium approach as well at the beginning. You know, they were going to use like a few form factor of pouch cells. Then they had prismatic cells that was all there at the presentation we went to, had them laid out. They had examples of these. I think they had cylinder. Send this, yeah, cells round as ones. Well. Yeah, I'm ones, gonna yeah. try. Oh my god. I'm not sure exactly what is the big change here, but I do know that they really need to improve, you know, their strategy somewhat, because it seems like when I look through the EPA certification documents, they have generally the gravimetric density of the pack at the pack level, and GM's numbers are all kind of low, you know, and plus their voltages are low. So I think they really kind of need to think their strategy to reduce the weight of their packs for one, and also get their voltages up where they really function well with the infrastructure, and, you know, preferably up to 800 for their higher end stuff at least. That's what I want to see. Yeah.
Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I don't know. The branding stuff never really impacts me so much. I care about the cars. And what I will say is it's been confusing as someone who's relatively close to the EV industry to figure out what the heck GM is doing, regardless of branding. It's, are there new cells in the new Silverado? Tell us what you're doing with the cars. I'm about to start a bunch of Blazer and Equinox testing and Silverado and Sierra EV testing. I'm going to have like a whole GM month over here. And I've just been like starting to wrap my head around, what are we getting into? What are the cars? What are the batteries? What are the offerings? And I'm like, wow, I am more confused than before I started to really dig into research different motor types and all this stuff. And what I really need to do is get Nebula's phone number and just call him, be like, yo, tell me what's going on here. Because we need to log, you know, we only have a couple more weeks of warm weather testing here, and we haven't done any GM testing other than the big Silverado work trucks. So we have a bunch of Blazer, Equinoxes, all this other stuff. My friends own them in the area. We have a couple media cars around, but not really that many. So we're basically going to borrow them from dealerships, from friends, and log all the numbers on them.
Excellent. Now, where's my notes that I had on my podcast this week? I had a quote here from Kurt Kelty, who is their VP of batteries, and he said, and I quote, as GM continues to expand, that's the written statement. He said that they have to have a different set of form factors going forward to be vehicle specific. That was the written statement from GM's. As GM continues to expand its EV business, the company is no longer branding its EV architecture, battery and cells, or EV components with the Ultium name. He revealed that the discontinuation of the Ultium battery brand, which was launched with very high expectations 4 or 5 years ago, that it's essential for developing batteries for specific vehicle requirements. That was the phrase that stood out to me, which is, we need to drop the Ultium name because we need to develop specific vehicle batteries. And, you know, my reaction would be, well, why can't you do that? And just, if you have to have a marketing name, I'm not sure you do, but everyone's got a big marketing department, they've got to keep them busy and all that, just call them Ultium. So I think there is more behind the scenes in this. And I think Ultium, you know, if I had the joint venture, the legal entity to build the gigafactories, Ultium Cells LLC is a joint venture between GM and LG. That when they announced a little while ago, we think we need to get some LFP packs in there to make the Bolt cheaper, and we're going to use Samsung SDI as a supplier. I think the first phone call as LG that I make to GM is, that's nice for you, but you can't call them Ultium Cells because we make Ultium Cells. And, you know, as Tom said already, how do you have an Ultium platform with Ultium Cells and all that kind of stuff if some of the cars you make are not Ultium? Doesn't make any sense. Now, earlier this year in February, the president, Mark Rias, announced the appointment of Kurt Kelty. He came from Tesla, but he started working with lithium ion batteries back in like 1993 at Panasonic, and was, you know, has been in the industry forever. And he came in from Tesla, where I think part of his job was building out Gigafactory 1 and Giga Nevada, as whatever we call it now. This is someone enormously senior in the company, and he was appointed in February. So here we are in October. That's about the right one, the correct runway for a, you know, a big corporate organization to have a change of strategy. But if I were him on day one, I'd have been like, right, well, we need a bunch of different cells from different suppliers. Remember, it blew people's minds in 2020 when we found out that CATL would provide packs for the Chinese-made Model 3s. And at the time, people thought, well, it'll just be for China, because Tesla plus Panasonic equals the cars. And that was only 4 years ago. And they also did a deal with, I think that there might be BYD blade batteries coming or in the cars. I don't, you know, I lose track of it, because Elon Musk said over the years as well, like, if we can't make our own 4680 cells as well as the market can, I'll shut down our battery making at Tesla and I'll buy it from the market. Which is brutal, but he's a CEO, so you've got to say that, and it probably is the reality as well. And it makes, you know, makes perfect sense that you go to, if there's a market, and many times over the years Tesla has had to create the market, like building the superchargers. If there's a market that can do it better than you, it makes sense to go and do it, and it makes sense for GM to go to the market and say, right, we need this solution for this use case for this vehicle at this price point. And I suspect Ultium, as Tom said, was all tied up in that. But it, hopefully it'll mean we get to make, you know, buy better vehicles and have better, you know, experiences with those. Okay, right, before we get going, Kyle, what happened this week with the, or you want to tell us about the Model 3 long-range rear-wheel drive versus Ioniq 6?
Yep, that video just went up, and I can tell you all the details about it. So we did a side-by-side range test from full to dead on Model 3 long-range rear-wheel drive, which is the new standard car, and it's, you know, the big boy range spec, which is awesome to see, and the Ioniq 6 big boy range spec, which was also awesome to see. So we had both fantastic configurations of both truly great cars, but the difference was interesting. First, talking about battery capacity, we pulled about 77.5, 77.6 kilowatt hours out of the Ioniq before it stopped, so pretty much got everything out of that. And interestingly, we pulled, it just ticked over to 80 kilowatt hours out of the Model 3 long range rear drive. So it's an 82 kilowatt hour pack, and about 80 usable is what we've learned, which is a little bit more because we did a long range all wheel drive that had a bit more mileage and age, and we got deep into the 79 kilowatt hours before it shut off. So it kind of makes sense. There was probably just a few hundred watt hour difference led up to degradation. So bear in mind, the Ioniq has less capacity, also had less efficiency. 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour is still amazing at 70 miles an hour. But Model 3, not only calculating off the in-car system, but also looking at how much energy we used, averaged 4.8 miles per kilowatt hour. Really amazing. It was like 212 watt hour per mile or something like that. 210, somewhere around there. And Ioniq 6, 332 miles on a charge. At 70 miles an hour, it then went 2 miles past 70 when it could no longer maintain 70 miles an hour. So it ended with 334 miles, but the number we'll put on the website is 332. And then get ready for this number. Model 3, the standard Model 3, did 384 miles at 70 miles an hour. And then it went one more before we coasted to a stop.
384.
The new Model 3 is amazing, man. I like
it. Long range rear wheel drive.
The new Model 3 is kind of, yeah, people are sleeping on that, really.
As I mentioned, I'm on the UK Tesla site, so I won't bring it up. It was like 4.8, so we'll call it 5. 5 miles per kilowatt hour on that new Model 3 in the UK is the absolute sleeper hit of the year. You know, you're in some crazy territory there. And it was $44,990. We don't get any discounts and things like that or credits, but that's incredible. Wait till the end of the last 2 weeks of the quarter and see what deal you can get on that with maybe some finance. But this deal as well with the Model 3 long range rear wheel drive in the US. Is that the one that recently got pulled?
No, that was the LFP.
So that was the one because there's a 25% now sort of Biden tax on, well, 100% on the Chinese EVs, but 25% on the batteries. They could sell it and either take a hit to their bottom line or charge more. It wouldn't make any sense because this vehicle is, this is the one that, is this the one that is the new base model? Is that right? I get confused.
Yes. This is the new standard and it's the Panasonic pack. So it qualifies for the full credit. In tomorrow's video, if you're Tesla people, you might want to watch this one. We lined up every single configuration of Model 3. So we had rear-wheel drive, LFP. We had standard range, or sorry, long-range rear drive, this car. We had two all-wheel drive long ranges, the Panasonic and the LG pack, and the performance. And we ran them all from full until they died on the side of the road. So people here probably are like, man, EVs keep running out of juice in the neighborhood. Why would I ever buy one of those?
Going through right there. Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, really, really fun times. That was really interesting. And I'll give away a little hint. Interestingly, we pulled more energy out of the Panasonic pack than the LG pack, but they had completely different behaviors at low state of charge and completely different charge curves. And Tesla doesn't tell you which one they're selling you unless you say you need it for the tax credit, in which case they'll give you the better Panasonic pack.
So say that whether it's true or not.
Yes, but absolutely.
Say that. That's what you need to say. Spotted Shark. So this is what Tesla should be focusing on. Yeah, I totally agree. This is the stuff that gets me really excited about Tesla. Amazing engineering depth in that business. You can keep your robots and stuff. It's all exciting. But yeah, this stuff is incredible. And I saw a comment earlier from one of our viewers that said, BYD blade packs going into the cars coming out of Giga Berlin, which is interesting. So that's good. Oh, and I saw the news this week while we're wrapping up charging that the Indian company Exicom closed on their deal to buy Tritium, about $7 or $8 million less than I think it was suggested a month ago. It's $37 million. They will keep their US, UK operations open. I think it's several hundred staff. But of course, they'll move a lot to India as well. They're a big charging company in India. You know, and the most important thing for me is a lot of hardware in the ground and we got to keep it going and supported. Right, that's our podcast. Not an hour and a half. We didn't even get to the batteries from GM. We didn't even get to the ID Buzz, but we will. We will another day, I promise. But we've done an hour and a half, and we're grateful for your time. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Before we go, we always say thank you very much for Tom's internet, for lasting and coming back. Thank you very much for watching and listening to the audio version of the podcast. Make sure you're subscribed on all the different channels. And if you're watching the YouTube version of this, please do share this for any version, please share it with anyone you know, friends, family, people in the industry that you think would like to listen or watch the show, as we love to grow this podcast. Thank you very much for your company, as always. Thanks, and we'll see you. Oh, yeah. Make sure you hit like. We'll see you very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Oh, ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.